Greetings, nerds. This is Cena Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Beaumont, and with me, as always, is our Mr. Producer, Will Polk. How are you doing today, Will?
I'm doing very well, Sarah, but I think I saw the devil running to the store to get an air conditioner.
The devil?
Yeah.
What? Is this some kind of southern analogy or something? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's just like summer is here in North Carolina. It's central North Carolina. It's like it's a very warm day today, very hot day actually. So
I don't think the heat brings out the best in you, Will.
It doesn't.
Earlier this week, you sent me one of the best DM messages I think you ever have sent me, and all it said was. It was one of those subtweets of Christian Harloff's review of Aladdin, and you're just like, do you think he's a Disney shill? I'm like, wow, where is all the shade coming from?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, speaking of Aladdin, it seems like it's had a pretty solid opening weekend. And my kids are like, especially were like, oh, we need to go see this, but I cut that off. There was one of the local theaters had retro weekend for Star Wars Day, and they're showing all the original trilogy and also the prequels. And so I was like, hey, y'all, let's go see Star Wars tonight on the big screen. You haven't seen it on the big screen, A New Hope, so. That was my way of getting out of Aladdin, but
you just don't want to see it.
I don't know. I run hot and cold on it, but yeah. Getting back to the Harloff thing, I listened to his comments on Collider Live, and it's one of those dad things. I think his daughter really liked it, and I think he liked it too. I know Roxy was like, oh, it's a perfect film, but we'll see. I may go check it out. It's one of those things that so far it seems that whenever Disney has adapted the cartoon to live action, it's been mixed results. But I will try to keep an open mind. I think it's probably more issue of Will Smith being a genie.
Mm-hmm. Ding, ding, ding.
There you go. But truth be told, that's really the issue. But it looks like it might be a fun film. So I'll take one for the team and probably go check it out.
I was looking at it too. And I'll be honest, I was surprised because there were some early showings here for it. And I was like, I could go that. But I could also go see Endgame again and I like Infinity War more than Endgame, and I'm still like, I could go see Endgame one more time.
Yeah.
There's just something about it where I think you hit it when you said these kind of movies keep getting mixed reviews. Some hit and work, and some don't. And I'm placing my bet, my money more on Lion King being a hit than Aladdin. Aladdin, I can wait. I can wait for it. I don't need to see it on the big screen because I'll be honest, the big blue genie guy who looks like Will Smith, I don't want to see that on the big screen. Yeah. I think the smaller screen might be more conducive for that.
I think so. Speaking of Endgame, I see it keeps on crawling towards. Relatively crawling. It's it's crossed 800 million domestically, and it's getting closer and closer to that 2.7.
Yeah, it's at 2.6 something right now, and I can tell you this is the first time where I've actually been obsessed with watching a box office, because I want it to pass it so bad.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just, and that's probably why I'm like, you guys need to stop talking about Aladdin, okay? We have a much more important task at hand that everyone should be contributing to.
Exactly. I still got to contribute my additional dollars to helping it break the record for Avatar. But I was reading an article in Forbes today as I was prepping for our show, and they were making a point that Endgame may not cross Force Awakens as far as 900 million as as far as domestic. Yeah. And for obvious reasons, I mean, Force Awakens was released at Christmas, which is always a big time. And the other big obvious reason is we haven't had a good Star Wars film in forever. So a lot of people obviously had that excitement with Force Awakens. But yeah, Endgame, it may make it. I think it probably have another big push right before Spider-Man comes out.
Yeah.
And they'll probably do another little push towards the end of summer. And so it may be later this summer when it happens instead of where it looked like it was going to cross it before the end of May. But, I do think it's still probably cross Avatar, which, you know, Disney has the best of all possible worlds because they own this property and they own Avatar. So when they release them in the future, it's going to do probably as well. But you're right. This probably is the first time I've really gotten like really swept up in, how much a film is making.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I still recall conversations about 300 mil being impossible, and then it did 350 in opening weekend. So it just shows that, yes, this if it's ever going to happen, it's going to be with this movie.
Yeah, but it won't be Sonic to see where they pushed the release date back for it because of the outcry over the teeth.
Oh no, I didn't, I haven't been paying attention to that at all. I didn't even watch the first trailer.
Well, the first trailer was one that really got the, drove the ire of the fans because they're like, his teeth aren't right. So Paramount basically, caved and said, we hear you and we are going to push the release date back so we can get Sonic right.
Well, you know. You gotta do what you gotta do with those kind of movies. It's interesting though how movie news has become a, often where release dates change, reshoots occur, and people are attributing that to the quality of the film. So, I don't know where we're going with this. You brought up Sonic, so you gotta get us out of Sonic, cause I got nothing. I'm so not interested in that.
Yeah, well, maybe you can like, whenever it comes out, you can be a verified user on Rotten Tomatoes with their updated, their rating system.
Yeah, I'm not even verified on Twitter. I doubt they'll ever verify me on
So check this out. So I guess because of all the like shade and bogus reviews that people were giving, especially with Captain Marvel and other films, Rotten Tomatoes decided to come up with a system so that before you can like give your review, you have to like basically use the email address that you bought your ticket online, and then you can then give a verified review. So basically they're trying to stamp down all the hate reviews that Panties Bunch fanboys are like getting their wad over certain films. So yeah, so that's what their way of doing it. They'll still have their old system where people can still see the unverified reviews, but this is just a way to try to tap out the negative fanboys.
I don't know really what to make of that because I understand why, but I also, for me personally, I don't like movie reviews. In that sense, I'm on the side where I think movies, because of what they are, you get the best conversations when people who have seen the same thing discuss it, and you get the insights and the takeaways, and that's really the value. The whole like, well, this reviewer said it was a good movie, so I'm gonna go see it. I don't really follow that because personally, I'm spoiler cautious.
Yeah. And so yeah.
If even if a good, like somebody says, oh, it's a good movie, go see it. I'm like, spoiler alert.
Yep.
I don't know why.
I know you were afraid to watch Collider this week because you were afraid when they were talking about the Vanity Fair article on Star Wars. I know. So I get you.
and it broke my heart because Kristen thinks that Poe and Rey are going to end up together. And I'm like, that's not the fan fiction I'm reading. It's just stop putting it out there. But it's just because it also sets you, I think it's more that I'm more sensitive with my expectations about something. So if like when you and Pete were going on about Aquaman, I was prepared for a movie that would be completely different than what I saw in the trailer. And when I watched it, I'm like, guys, this is a trailer. I had no interest in it. So of course, like suddenly my expectations, like I'm a bit disappointed.
Right.
And I think you even do that when you're a movie reviewer. And so I don't like the non-spoiler reviews. I don't like them. I don't think it discredits a movie because in the end, did you go see that movie even though they may have put something like negative? Probably you did, and you're just mad because it doesn't have 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like what? Who cares? Like Black Panther didn't. Did you see how many Academy Awards it won?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like nobody in the end, it shouldn't matter. And you know what? For the producers who kind of look to that as like a gauge, well, if it's a shitty movie, it doesn't matter if people go to it or if they don't go to it because all of the buzz is going to be negative because it's a bad movie.
Yeah. It will take
So
care of
it's,
itself.
yeah. So, I mean, if they, it makes sense. However, I just know for my viewing preferences, I've never gauged it by like what it says on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I hear you. And it's interesting how Rotten Tomatoes sort of became like the barometer for films and TV shows to begin with. It just and maybe it's just because of the age of the internet and that kind of thing, but it's all of a sudden, all of Tomatoes was like the almost like end all be all for audience and critical response to things, and and so it's I guess they're a victim of their own success because now they're having to do these fixes to try not to create stories about how good or bad a film is, or ancillary things about them.
Yeah, and I mean, to that point, I also think if you want to know what to watch, Twitter is a better barometer. Like, and last week we had a big discussion on Twitter and all of the trolls and the hatred that's spewed from that. But on the flip side, you, on your timeline, you are following people who generally have the same perspective, worldview that you do. So if they say they're watching something, and that you haven't watched before, most likely it's probably something you want to check out because you'll 9 times out of 10, that'll become your new obsession. I mean, that's how I find new shows to watch and everything. I binge watched Barry this weekend. Barry, by the way, it's brilliant. Everybody should watch it. Really easy binge. Season two, just make it through season one because season two, it's perfect.
Note it, note it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, now let's get into our shows and why we really are here.
Yeah. We haven't done a new thing in a while, so it's just good to catch up on some of that stuff.
Absolutely. No, I always like it when we talk about that kind of stuff, and hopefully in the near future we'll have time to do a full show about upcoming movie and TV shows of the second half. Yes, I know we're already at that, almost at that midway point through the year. But it's coming. And for now, though, we have some things to tie up, including Doom Patrol, which aired its series finale this past week. It's over. 15 episodes and done.
15 and done. There might be a season two though, so hopefully there is a season two. But if DC decides not to renew it, what a hell of a season this was.
If DC decides not to renew Doom Patrol and it renewed Teen Titans, I may just be done with DC because that is some BS.
That would be some BS. Yes.
This series is far superior than whatever that was.
Yeah, way superior. I mean, I was just when I was prepping, I was just thinking about how this bottom line up front, how organic and how natural they built a family and a team in this series, and that's really what stood out for me with Doom Patrol is versus Titans. It was at the end of the day how they set this up and how they with this finale. It's interesting how they used the series finale to show how Niles basically predestined the outcomes for all the members of the team to his benefit, of course, but in a way that all the things we've watched in the previous 14 episodes stayed true to itself and stayed true to how you can do a superhero show in a good way and build a universe with some very not so well known characters.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Doom Patrol, Jane Patrol is probably my favorite episode of TV so far this season. This year.
Yeah.
Because I think it's perfection, and it's still, when I think of the series, I immediately go to certain images from that episode because it just struck me so hard. And we've been watching a lot of good TV lately. I mean, besides the Arrowverse.
Yeah.
I have some shade. So it tells me something. I will say though, in the series finale, we did not need to see a rat and a cockroach make out. I'm sorry. I did not sign up for rat and cockroach action. That was just.
Yeah. I thought of you when I saw, whenever I was watching the finale, because I was just like, I wonder what Sarah's making out of Admiral Whiskers and Ezekiel the cockroach right at this moment.
I'm thinking too far. I'm like, oh God, they went there. They did that. There's somebody in that writer's room who came up with that scene as well as the butt scene. And like, it's funny because as odd as it is, I think, like, the scene with the butts being released in the farm and a few other scenes, that's why, even though it was disturbing, I'm like, this makes sense in terms of the universe they've set up.
It totally. And they set it up way back in episodes 1 and 2 with the farting donkey.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they all come out of the cockroach in the end, I was like, yeah, I mean, this show started with them all getting trapped inside of an albino donkey. Of course, it's going to end with them coming out of a cockroach.
Yeah.
So it just comes full circle. Like, there's something genuine about that as opposed to foreseen things happen. And I mean, to go back to your point about them building a family much more so than Titans did, I think it's because none of these characters tried to play like the main hero.
Right.
It was all of their stories together. And of course we all have our favorites, but at the end of the day, this show isn't about one of them over the other. It's about all of them together and how they do take care of each other. Like, I like how there's the reveal about Niles and what his true motivations were. And yet, even though they all went their separate ways, you still have Larry and Rita together, because those two, there is something about each other that they need. They're the only ones they can really be honest with.
Yeah.
They understand the flaws. They understand why each other hides so much from the world. And so they get each other. So they're still living their life together. And that scene where Jane is all strung out in her vehicle and Cliff comes and drops off food, I'm like, classic.
Classic, yeah. He's such, to quote you, he's such a dad.
he's so funny because he even does the whole, I'm going to place it right here and then I'm going to back away slowly.
Yep.
Sudden movement.
Yep.
And I like how he didn't want to do this final mission.
Right.
And yet the moment Jane says, yes, let's do this, he switches.
He switches, yeah. He does switch. And I think that's what I really loved about Cliff and Jane's dynamic all season. It was you know, there was that father-daughter. He saw that, and he played it forward with Niles and his true motivations for why he assembled these individuals to begin with, which was to try to find his daughter. And Cliff, just in vintage Cliff F-bomb form, was just like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not, you know, if you could turn back, build a, you know, time machine and give me my 30 years back for all the, you know, crap you've put me through. But then, as you said, with Jane, just like, really, it's the evolution of her character and where she was, and especially as you mentioned Jane Patrol and the things that came that she learned about herself that came out of that episode, and making some, I guess, through the opiate addiction that she had, and whenever they all went their separate ways, making some kind of peace with the underground, mm-hmm. and coming forward with, look, I was a wreck before this man, and even though I still don't trust him, I do owe something to him, not because I am doing it because I like him, but because he's made me, because of this journey, I'm now a better person than I was before we started.
Yeah, I like that line when she's in the underground and everybody's in their days, and one of the personalities says to her, "This isn't healing." Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Niles, yeah, he broke everybody, but he also allowed everyone to heal, mm-hmm. and allow everyone to get put back together again. And I think that was just perfect and exactly and dealt with what the issue was. I mean, I really liked Rita in this final episode, oh, yeah. because for her, she spent so much of the season in shame, mm-hmm. Blocking out the outside world, not able to look at herself in the mirror. And then when she can walk away from it all, she realizes how much it's given her. And so, yes, Niles may have put her into this situation and taken everything away, but he also created this world where she could be the hero and could gain back some of that integrity that she lost all those years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and the same, and we could, Larry is another character, mm-hmm. that had that same journey as everyone else did. But the other thing that really stood out to me was the scene between Niles and Silas Stone when they were having the surgery to help build Cyborg, and how Niles was trying to say, look, you know, you had two fathers there basically dealing with a tragic situation, Niles trying to say, Silas, you're just like me, and Silas is going back, throwing it back to him, like, no, I'm not like you, mm-hmm. and I'm not what I'm doing here for Vic to put him whole is because I love him and I want the best for him. You're doing it for some selfish purpose, but at the same time though, Silas was also doing this for very selfish reasons. Mm-hmm. So it was a interesting, especially since we've seen how Silas has treated Vic very protective and trying to always shelter him and control him. It was a very interesting dynamic to see Silas and Niles talk about that, because where Niles definitely was a jerk and had his issues, Silas also has issues as well, and not allowing Vic to be free and always just trying to micromanage him. And so it was a good moment. And I came out of that scene, having sympathy for both men, because they're both flawed in their approaches and their motivations for doing things, you know, Silas in Vic's case and Niles and building the Doom Patrol.
Well, I think what this show does very well is puts all of the flaws in each one of these characters under a microscope, mm-hmm. and being a hero doesn't mean you're perfect, or being a good person, or being able to save the world, or save each other, protect one another. Like, you're somewhat always going to be selfishly motivated. With a lot of your actions, because often, I mean, look at Superman and Lois Lane. Like, he, at the end of the day, Clark really just wants to save Lois. She just happens to always find herself in, put in that place where it's either, where she's on, they're on the brink of destroying the world, and if you save Lois Lane, then you save the day.
Yeah.
But it, there is some selfish motivation there. It's not about the world, it's about one person.
It is. It is. Yeah, I was reading an article about the showrunner Jeremy Carver, and you know, we were talking a lot about character and everything, and thinking back to when you bring up Lois and Clark, one of the things that stands out to me with the show, one of the things that he said that he learned from his time working on Supernatural, is to make sure characters stay true to themselves. And that's one of the things that this series did throughout the first season, which was these characters from day one, even through their evolution and working through their various problems, stayed true to who they were, and there was some genuineness to that. So even though, because of what Niles being the cause of all the accidents that befell each one of these individuals, we still, despite all that, flaws and all, they kept them. They learned how to deal with those flaws in their personalities and yet still remain true to who they are. And Larry making peace with negative energy guy, and Rita, you know, being not cool with Elastigirl, even though it was very heartbreaking with the way that 13-year-old like crushed her. And, but Larry, you know, I guess, but Larry being there to help her, you know, look, don't let that tear you apart. You've come through so much. And so, Cliff and Jane's, their relationship, and also how Rita, because of what all she's been through, was able to have empathy for Mr. Nobody when they were wearing Danny the Street. And when Nobody was on the verge of a breakdown, especially given that he was betrayed by a rat and a roach. And,
oh my God. Yeah, they brought back Admiral Whiskers, of course. who ends up eating Cliff, which was pretty funny. And then Cliff was like, I don't deserve this.
I don't deserve this. I'm not going to die in a fucking rat.
No, you're just going to go through a much more scarring experience, though. Just wait a few scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the flaw was Mr. Nobody could have spilled the secret very early on in the season. But first he wanted to capture Niles and make these people like feel like they cannot be anything without Niles. And instead they went on this journey where they figured out who they were without Niles. So I think had he shared this secret with them, in episode one, it would have been much more life shattering than it was at the time that it did get exposed, because by that point they were already formed their identity without Niles, even though they still need him because he is that like piece that connects them all together, and he's just as flawed as they are. It's still they're much different people than they are now than they were.
Definitely and Rita being the one who actually was able to provide some comfort and empathy towards Nobody in the cabaret lounge and Danny the Street, got him able to fit, become the narrator again, and to not only help the team defeat Ezekiel and Admiral Whiskers, but which again, every time I see it, I talk of mention Ezekiel and Admiral Whiskers, I feel like I need to go flush out my eyes with that.
It just didn't need to happen. It didn't need, like, Rita should have been narrating that crap, not stupid nobody who made it happen.
Yeah.
Okay, and really the show, this episode, is not about Ezekiel, even though it's called Ezekiel Patrol or Admiral Whiskers or Mr. Nobody. It's really about Niles and what he's also doing for his daughter, mm-hmm. who turns out to be Dorothy Spinner. Who is a character who has been a former member of Doom Patrol, and she has the ability to bring imaginary beings to life.
Right, right. Which is, if we do get a second season, at least in the comic books, she used that power with the Candlemaker, who was the villain. Which causes all kinds of havoc in the comics, even to the point where Niles even gets killed by the Candlemaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting how they set us up for a second season, but if the show doesn't get renewed, it does feel like they concluded the story they wanted to tell in the first season.
Yeah. Yeah. In a very strong way. I mean, this series, whenever I've been able to, when people are like, oh, what's a good show, especially some of our Arrowverse fans to watch now that the summer's here and hiatus is here, I'm like, go watch Doom Patrol. If you want to watch good storytelling, good characterization, good characters staying true to themselves, which all, you know, I'm thinking of all the things folks complain about our Arrowverse shows, then this is the elixir to wash your palate of that if you're kind of frustrated with them right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It is different. It's familiar, but it's different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was gonna say, but again, it just stays true to itself. All these things that happen that in this series, the absurdity, the absurd humor, the laugh out loud moments, the characterization, the Mr. Nobody being like uber meta. I mean, it's all like true to itself. And that's why it's been refreshing to watch this show this season. It's best to become my favorite one of 2019 so far. And also why it's been superior to Titans. That was the first show that was rolled out on this platform. And it'll be interesting to see if they learned some lessons from, I don't know as far as the production timeline between the two shows, but if it was being produced around the same time that Titans was, and they were able to look at some of the mistakes that Titans made in their freshman run, they definitely learned some lessons from that in constructing the show.
Yeah, I'm sure that they had similar time frames because we're first introduced to these characters in Titans.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a perfect season. I do think it's a really strong season of storytelling. I think there are some bright moments, but there's also a few episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
That I could barely make it through.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I know. I remember having that discussion with you. I had that same around the third, fourth, fifth mm-hmm. episodes. They were, I was like, I don't know. I'm trying to see where this thing is going, but I'm glad I stuck with it.
Yeah, I think it's hard, especially when you're watching the first season of a show because it's new. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of shows where you're on the fourth or fifth season, you've come to just love just because you love the characters. And it's like, regardless of what happened, I'm here because I'm interested. And the first season, it's all about introducing the characters. So it still feels like you're watching some strangers until you get to that finish line. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for Doom Patrol. Another show we have to talk about today is Cloak and Dagger Season 2. It just had its penultimate episode, Blue Note. Mm-hmm. Next week is it for this season.
Yeah, it's been a fast season, but it's been an enjoyable one.
Yeah, I feel like even the first season snuck up on me because it's 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get dragged out or anything. They always seem to set up clear plot lines for Tandy and Tyrone, and you just see it from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where to begin with this episode because a lot has happened since the last time we talked about it.
Yeah, yeah. I know we didn't get a chance to talk about episode 8, which had a lot of setup for this episode. We learned about Connors being murdered by Adina, and we also started seeing some of the end game with Andre trying to become closer to godhood with his Vive and everything. We learned about Auntie Chantil dying and Evita, as we called, would be taking her place.
Mm-hmm.
And Evita marrying Papa
Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. And the video game. Yeah, so there was a lot in that episode leading into this one. You got that deeper realization, I think, between Ty and Tanny. They really realize that they do need each other and all things when it comes to working together as crime fighters and saving New Orleans. So those are some of the things that stood out to me from episode 8. But this episode, really, it was a backstory for Andre.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to, we start 96 months ago. When we're first introduced to Andre, and he's in the club, and he's talking about with his bandmates about hitting that blue note on his trumpet, and that's when the migraines he has his first one on stage, debilitating, knocks him out right there in the middle of the performance, and leads to, I guess, his down the road of despair.
You know, earlier this season, I think they did a similar episode, but it was about mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of jumping back and forth, much like this episode, where some scenes were in the past, some scenes were in the present, some scenes took place in the pocket dimension where Tandy and Tyrone were learning everything about Andre. And more importantly, about Leah. I mean, mm-hmm. this episode was just as much about Leah as it was Andre.
Yeah.
Because we learned that following his accident, Leah was the nurse.
And
he figured out really early on that her pain would be the cure to his headaches. And then like that scene where he's convincing her to quit her job, and you're just the manipulation that occurs, and that it is just brutal because you're like, you know what he's doing, and it's just it's not violent,
no,
but it feels very disturbing because of the pure manipulation.
Yeah, he was the master at manipulating her and gaslighting her, and really. You're right. It was a story about the two of them because she was his first victim, but it really gets into it. They really touch on it. I don't know if now obviously in an hour television show, you can't dig too much into it unless they carried out some, stretched it out to 11 or 12 episodes or whatever. But,
mm-hmm.
But really get into that question of victimhood and even with the showdown between Tandy and Mayhem, how much was Leah responsible for what happened?
Right. Because much of this episode, you have Tandy wanting to kill Leah because Leah is in her sights, in her presence. Andre is still off, and her and Tyrone are trying to track him down. But because Leah is front and center, unconscious, fully vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
all Tandy can think about is that hotel and her forcing her to be that vulnerable too, and putting her in that situation. And I don't blame her. Like, honestly, a lot of us would probably have had the same reaction, because when you go through something like that, I mean, for a lot of it was from Leah. It wasn't from Andre. Andre was off doing his own thing. It came from Leah. So I think you're spot on when you're saying, like, it goes into that idea of victimhood, because Tandy realizes it through watching the manipulation that occurred to Leah firsthand. She understands, like, yes, she may have done these things years later, but it doesn't mean that at one point she wasn't the first victim of Andre herself.
Yeah, so even though she was complicit in his crimes, which she clearly is, I mean, there's no denying that. But again, it's, yeah, it was, as I said earlier, it does get touched on those issues. And another thing about Andre too, with these migraines, and just thinking about the show in its larger context of how they take on social issues and those kind of things, it would have been interesting to see why he couldn't get treatment for his migraines. I mean, was it a situation where, was they're always bringing up social issues, and was it, health care? I mean, could he not access it? I mean, it would have been good to have a, I guess, a deeper understanding beyond just like, oh, I have migraines, so now I'm going to become this despair-seeking individual, to understand a little bit more about his motivations.
Yeah, I agree, because I also interpreted that scene as he didn't start having those until he tried to have the Blue Note. And in that moment, because it was so high and powerful, and he was even speaking beforehand, like, this is the note that separates the men from the gods. So something that powerful, like, breaking it is like breaking a barrier, and may lead to glory, but it could also lead to pain and suffering. So I felt like it was much more of a metaphor for that.
True.
But you're right. I mean, if the show, I mean, there's pros and cons to a short season. The pro being you can stick to the script and not wander too much. The con is you have less time to get delve really deep into motivations.
But to your point, you do raise a good one that, and answer my question, it's, or statement, it's, we go from that 96 months to, I guess, when he tried to commit suicide, it was around, what, 92 months?
Yeah, I don't know. It was it he we started before the explosion, and then the explosion happens
The night he,
when he tries to commit suicide.
yeah, which again, which, we talked about earlier this season, how it was a very parallel tracked with Tandy when she, in the season one, tried to commit suicide when she was in her lowest points. And so, there's the Spare character and Tandy have very similar tracks that I think one of the reasons why I've enjoyed this season so much is because Ty and Tandy are the anchors to one another to keep each other from going too far with their abilities. And so where Despair manipulated Leah into basically becoming a supplier for his energy to help him deal with his headaches, in a very unhealthy codependent way. Ty and Tandy's work together to keep each other in check and to keep from going way off too far. Because looking later in the episode when Tandy was like, we're going to, I want to do this, we may have to kill Andre. And Ty was like, well, no. If we have to take that ultimate step, we're going to do this together.
And I think he knows that most likely they will have to end it. The only way to end this would be to do that. And I honestly think if they don't do that, then there might be some disingenuous about these, what they set out to do with this season and choosing something this hard. Because I mean, these comics are dark. They're some of the darker ones out there, and these characters are some of the darker characters with everything that they go through. So, maybe he just ends up in another pocket dimension. But I think that for Tandy's purposes, she might need something like that to deal with in the third season, if there is a third season. Because much like how we saw Tyrone dealing with Detective Connors, the aftermath in this season, Tandy hasn't really had to deal with that too much.
Not too much. I mean, she had to deal with it a little bit, I guess, with season one, with the death of the gentleman who was the lawyer who was dating her mom, who had all the secrets of Roxxon in his office. But that was not directly because of her action. Well, a little bit because of her actions, but this would definitely be more so because she was in the heart of Andre and Leah's, you know, counseling group, and we saw the results of that at the end of the episode where her mother and McKay in the courtyard when Andre was performing a blue note.
Yeah. I forgot about Melissa this season because we haven't seen her in a lot of episodes.
No. And she's been, and well, I think it's been okay because a lot of her demons she overcame. Obviously, we saw, I guess, mid part of this season, she did her alcoholism problems reoccurred. And part of that probably was because now Andre and Leah were, where before they were kind of, you know, the support group was keeping a lot of her demons under control. Now, since that control and manipulation was gone, she fell back into some bad habits.
Yeah. I think Tyrone in this episode served in an interesting purpose. I still, to go back to our discussion about the first episode this season, I don't think that kid is going to be studying for college too much longer. I really don't. Yeah. Because in this episode, you saw him. There's a confidence now with the way he moves, mm-hmm. the way he uses his powers.
Yeah.
And there's a strength in that I don't think we've seen. And I think it's taken us these past 9 episodes to really get that through in Tyrone. I mean, Tandy's always one to quickly draw her dagger, but Tyrone now fully understands what he's able to do with his cloak. And I think that's really cool because it circles back. They allow this whole story arc with Tandy and Despair to really circle back to Tyrone dealing with the drug dealers and having some negotiations, if you call it that. I think last episode, Will, you pointed out, it's interesting how they always find themselves back at that church.
Yeah.
Well, Tyrone has claimed the rooftop for himself.
Yeah, he has claimed that rooftop.
That is his meeting ground.
Yeah.
It's just really funny how he always winds up going there and bringing people up there to tell them how it is. And he lays down the law. And I think it's interesting how he does it because he acknowledges the world in what he says to them by, like, there are people who are going to seek this out. Mm-hmm. Those are your customers. Mm-hmm. But when these drugs are used for manipulation, then we got an issue because there are some people who just find themselves like being the prey. And that's unfair and unjust. And so I think I really liked that speech.
Yeah.
Hopefully this doesn't lead to any kind of deputization in the future,
because no, I don't think so.
That is not a vigilante role.
No. They're writing is too smart, and I'm glad you brought that point up about the rooftop and how Ty's grown and utilized, and how again they pull in all the threads, because the theme of manipulation and the trafficking and everything does feed into the drug trade, and even the drug dealers themselves are like, oh yeah, but you know, this, if we do what you're talking about, it's going to, you know, it's going to impact the market. And so it's like, well, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this, a lot of it has focused really on Tandy. I think Tyrone has kind of taken a back seat this season, if I'm being honest, even though he has had some really cool arcs, especially in with this episode, including him realizing what his mom did to Connors. That needs to be explored
Yeah,
soon.
very, very soon. Very, I think they'll address that in the finale, season finale. If they don't, I'll be very surprised.
Well, season finale, season three, there's a lot to get into about that because again, I always go back to that scene when he realizes what mayhem is and equates himself to her. And I really like that because there is something about, there's a naivety to that I think is very important. He gained his confidence as a vigilante. I think he still needs to retain that. Just to stick to who he was before the accident. Another thing I really liked, first of all, Luke Cage Easter
Yes,
egg. That was brilliant. Like, come on, I call a spade a spade. I love that. I don't need to see Luke Cage in the series. I really don't, but
No.
acknowledgement of who he is, it's just, it was cool.
It was very cool. It was a very cool moment, and I love the way they even last season with Bridget, and even earlier this season with Bridget talking about New York and with Misty Knight. I mean, it's again, it reminds us how interconnected this universe is to the larger Marvel universe. But the way they use Luke Cage and talking, to your point about Ty's confidence when he was talking to the kid in the shop about education and everything. Yes, you're probably right. Ty's track now probably will change, that he will not go the traditional route that he was originally going to go on. But at the same time, he still sees the value of education and using Luke as a way to, like, say, kid, learn how to read. I just love that scene. I mean, there were so many elements to that, not only the major Easter egg drop of Luke and what Luke stands for, but also how Ty uses that to help that kid out.
Yeah, but the kid had the best line of the episode. Not Ty. The kid did, because the kid says, some things you can't fix, and just because it's broke doesn't mean it's broke. Like, there is some real wisdom in that, and I think it gets to the true nature of the show and what the show's about, and it is really reminiscent of the classic Barry Allen, Jay Garrick scene in a coffee shop talking about time travel. Like, you can fix these things, but there's still always going to be a crack.
So,
You can
and I,
put it all back together again, make it okay, but the scar will remain.
yeah, and I think that, and I think getting to how that played out in this episode, Ty's resolution with the drug trade in New York in New Orleans was that he realized that he can't solve it all, and it can't go away. But if you stop using these drugs to manipulate people, you won't get any issues from me.
You, because you can't stop it from happening altogether, but you can stop when it goes beyond that.
And I think that's why this show is works so well for me, because it really does, it shows the limitations of these quote unquote superheroes, and that they can't solve all the world's problems. And so it's a very grounded thing. And even our Arrowverse shows, when they work well, like you said, with Jay Garrick and Barry's conversation in a coffee shop, those are the things that make these shows really work very well, when they drop those truths like that. And they really did, as you said, the kid had the best line of this episode.
Well, I mean, Tyrone and Barry Allen are really similar. I mean, even throwing Oliver Queen there. Yes, they're all the same gender, but they also are very stubborn in their ability to fix things
Yes. Very much.
rather than like the proactive solution. It's just about fixing the situation or what your upbringing is or the problem at hand. And I think Tyrone, he wants, I mean, what he was doing in the first episode in terms of getting all the money, there was a confidence, but there was also, he was going about it the wrong way. Like even yeah. Bridget called him out on, and he's like, yeah. No, you don't understand. You keep messing with these investigations. And so now he's circled back around and realized he can still help. He just also he has to go about it in a very different way, due to who he is and what he represents.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to, yeah. So I know you said earlier Ty was taking a back seat this season. I don't think he did. The more we talk about it, I think his story was not as in your face as far as his arc, as far as growing it and to understand what we just talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Maybe backseat was the wrong phrasing for it. I still think that it was a lot of it is focused on Tandy just because she's that quick access point to Andre yeah. and because he was the big bad.
But
it is true that as we discuss it more, Tyrone has had his own journey to walk this season. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't get a scene between him and Evita. She just married herself to Vea.
Yeah. Well, but we did have that moment there at the end of the last episode, though, where she did have that very icy look at Ty when she, because, yeah. you know, she had goals of going to med school, and now because of the deal that she made to save Ty and Tandy, she now can't do that.
Yeah, and it's also interesting how everything always gets connected back to the Roxxon explosion.
Yep.
And so they keep using that, but they're not using it in a way where I'm like suddenly like, yes, there was an explosion, it happened. Like it's this subtle plot point that they're allowed to use as really a gateway for all of these things to start happening, mm-hmm. but it's also not in your face too much.
Right, right. Good point. Very good point.
All right. Well, that is it, I think, for us today. Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk. That's WILLMPOLK.
You can find me on Twitter at SJ Belmont, SJBELMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Scene and Nerd. Friend us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, but most importantly, rate, subscribe, and comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Spotify. Good night, geek out. You're welcome.